We mentioned last time that the most common pshat among the Mefarshim for how tefillah works is that it works a little indirectly. It's not that you need to ask Hashem for what you want, because He knows everything already and He has His plan as to what to give you, and He knows better than you do anyway. So asking Him is really no point. The point of tefillah is really to remind ourselves of our relationship with Hashem, and Rav Hirsch says, and our how all of our life has to revolve around our priorities involving Hashem. And when we make ourselves better, then Mela, we deserve a schar, you know, with the caveat that schar is sometimes complicated. But at least, all else being equal, we make ourselves better, we deserve more schar. And that's why tefillos are answered. And according to this, it could very well be that, you know, the tefillos aren't necessarily even answered necessarily with what you ask for. You know, maybe you'll ask for something that's really not so involved for you, but if you do a really good job of davening, Hashem might give you something that really is good for you. Because it's not that we tell Hashem and then He listens, it's that really by talking to Hashem we improve ourselves, and then Mela, we deserve good things. The Rambam, Agav, I don't know, did we read the Rambam last time, number 2? Okay, the Rambam said the same thing, but in a Rambam derech, instead of a more standard, traditional Balabatish derech, which is that the Rambam understands that Schar V'Onesh is, right, there are two fundamental schools of thought in understanding Schar V'Onesh, which really comes up in all sugyas. Schar V'Onesh is sort of artificial, like Hashem rewards you if you're good, or Schar V'Onesh is natural, being good automatically leads to a reward. The Rambam in most places takes very strongly the natural idea of Schar V'Onesh, meaning just to use a mashal, this is a very important talk to you in Schar V'Onesh, right? If the kids aren't studying in math class, I could tell them, if you don't pay attention, you lose recess. That's an artificial Schar V'Onesh, or an external Schar V'Onesh. Or I can tell them, if you don't study, you won't do well in the SATs, and you won't get into a good college, and you won't be able to succeed in your career. That is a natural Schar V'Onesh, meaning that's, yeah, naturally, listening to math class helps me learn math, assuming I have a decent teacher. And that's an internal Schar V'Onesh. The Rambam clearly holds me internal Schar V'Onesh. The Rambam says the exact same shot. He just says it as an internal natural Schar V'Onesh. In number 2, he says, Ha'ora, halobi artilach, shezeh seichel sheshafa aleinu me'ashem yis'alu, hu adibar shavideinu beinu, that the only way for us to connect to Hashem is through our seichel. And it's all up to you. You have bechira chashis. If you want to strengthen your connection to Hashem, fine. And if you want to weaken it until it disappears, that's also fine. I mean, it's not fine, rather, but you can. The only way to increase your dveikas to Hashem is to use your seichel for avas Hashem, and to think about Hashem. And it gets weaker whenever you think about anything but Hashem. It says, The reason for all mitzvos, like learning Torah and davening and other mitzvos, the reason is only just to think about and busy yourself thinking about things that have to do with Hashem, as opposed to the rest of the things in the world. And therefore, whenever you do these mitzvos, it's you're thinking about Hashem and not other things in the world. And that's the point of connecting to Hashem. So for the Rambam, what's the point of tefillah? He says, it's rock only. The only point of tefillah is to think about Hashem, which is similar to what everyone else has said. And then he adds, v'nei nigla iyo nifla ma'od. This is a very important parakim or nevucha for many sugyas. Yosur v'ustekos v'izgal v'osodot elokios. We already explained earlier, in like the teens of Chelek Gimel of Mor Nevuchim, that in accordance with your seichel is Ashkacha Pratis, right? People have Ashkacha Pratis because they have seichel. Dogs and cats and fish and beetles don't have Ashkacha Pratis because they don't have seichel. And he also explained, people who have more seichel, we learned this in the last Inyan, have more Ashkacha Pratis. People who have less, not more seichel in terms of IQ. People who use their seichel successfully in thinking about Hashem of Morashkacha Pratis. Therefore he says, V'ish Hashon Masagosu Shal Yosur Sechlim Hashem Tamid, Ti Hashkacha Bo Tamid. Someone who perfectly understands Hashem and never stops thinking about Hashem has total Hashkacha Pratis. V'ish Shalom Asaga Sher Tifnim Achshat Hashem Tas Itim, Ti Hashkacha Bo V'ish Chishva Hashem Levad, V'tashar Hashkacha Mena Be'isa Isko V'lo Sosman V'os Kisur Mishal Yasko Klal.
Aval tamayit ashkocha hi achar shein leshu shalom basagos. He says go seichel befoal. From the wasu masik bechoakarov.
Okay, what's he basically saying? He's saying that he's solving here a problem which we have not yet dealt with. The Odyssey. Why do bad things happen to good people? The answer is, if someone stops thinking about Hashem and thinks about the stock market or anything else, then they lose their level of Ashgacha Prat. This, obviously, someone's always on a high Madrega, even when they stop thinking about Hashem, are potentially subconsciously thinking about Hashem. So they still have a high level, but not quite as high. So the Rambam basically says, when do bad things happen? When you have less Ashgacha Prat. When do good things happen? When you have more Ashgacha Prat. How do you have Ashgacha Prat? By thinking about Hashem, such as davening. So for the Rambam, it's very clear. How does davening work, to be answered? The same as the other Rishonim when we saw last time. Davening works because it makes you a better person, and therefore you deserve a reward, but not in an artificial, external, losing recess way, but an internal way, because when you daven, you think about Hashem, that connects your mind to Hashem, and then naturally you go pratis, and Hashem takes care of you. But it's the same basic approach, just in a more, you know, Maimonidean philosophical sense, rather than in a regular, traditional Balabatsar sense. Okay, one of the questions we left unanswered last time, before we go on to other approaches, is someone asked the obvious question, which they should have asked, I forgot who it was, which is, hold on, if the whole reason davening helps, again, I don't mean helps like it's a good experience, the whole reason it gets answered is because it improves you and you deserve something, then how can you daven for someone else, right? I hope that everyone in this room davens for other people, right? It's an important thing we learned from Abraham and other, of our role models. So, how can you daven for other people? If I daven for other people, I might deserve something. Let's say someone else is sick. So I daven for them. Let's say, I know, Reuven is sick. Right? There is a Reuven. Let's say, I don't know, Suriel ben Avichayel is, Chas v'Shalom has a terrible cancer, and I daven for him. Right? So, I might deserve refuah, but why does he deserve refuah? He didn't improve just because I daven for him. He's the same guy he always was. So why should it help to daven for someone else? And don't say it doesn't help. Obviously, we must say that it does help. Now, in a Hanami, what does Chazal say? If I daven for someone else, who does it help more, me or him? It says me, right? By Avram we know, right? We learn from Avram and Melech, right? By Yisrael Avram Elohim, by Yisrael Avram Sarim Melech, v'es Yishnovi Amosad by Yileidu, right? V'chulei, right? By Hashem Pachadash Arach Asher Amar, we all know the Rashi quotes from many Midrashim, a Dikduk principle, that the Lashon v'Hashem Pakad as opposed to v'yifkod Hashem means it happened previously, not just now. So that shows that Hashem made Sarah pregnant before he even made Avimelech's wife able to give birth, which shows if you daven for someone else, then you get answered first. So that works beautifully. Yeah, of course if I daven for someone else, I get answered first, because I'm the one who became a better person, so of course I deserve more of an answer than they do. But they also get answered, right? It also helps for them. So how did it help for them? That's a mystery which all the Achronim deal with, because they all know this mainstream shot in tefillah. So how can I daven for someone else? That other person hasn't improved. Why should he deserve to get better? So, I've seen three answers. Unfortunately, I lost that page somewhere, and I don't have Mar Makomos for them. But I think there's one place that Stam Sofer points out, but this is a little tricky. This depends on a different philosophical issue, which is, what's the nature of Klal Yisrael? So he says, hold on a second, there's a kash on this, but he says, if we assume each person is a different person, is an independent person, then that's a good kasha. But if you assume all of Klal Yisrael is one goth, is Rishami the Taka says that, right? I don't remember which context Rishami says that. Okay, exactly. Right, Rishami says, why is Lo Sikim Lo Sitra as Bnei Amecha? Interestingly, the Yerushalmi focuses on Bnei Amecha. I mean, halachically it's Bnei Amecha, but that doesn't have to be the philosophical focus. The Yerushalmi says, right, because if I'm chopping meat and I accidentally cut my left hand, would my left hand pick up the cleaver and cut my right hand? Meaning, we're all one goth. And of course, it's not Mestaber doing the Kamo Netira. So, I think there's some sofer someplace, but I forget, I lost the Maramakum at the last minute, who says, no, since all of Klal Yisrael is one goth, then it makes sense we get davening for someone else. Because really, our Schar Va'onish is in this together. Right, anyone who's better in Klal Yisrael, those Zechuyos help for all of Klal Yisrael, because we're one goth. It's a problem, because then you shouldn't be able, then davening for Goyim shouldn't help. And yet we see that Avram davened for Avimelech, etc. All right, maybe you could answer that was some very, very specific case that Hashem wanted to make a certain point. But one answer could be, at least if you're davening for another Jew, that we're really not different people. We're really the same person. And every time every Jew improves, that helps all of Klal Yisrael.
Based on the answer, they just said that therefore you're better, therefore you're more worthy of being answered. So if the same way how
exactly. So that's the second popular answer, which is that no, it depends what you mean by davening for someone else. If davening for someone else, you mean I'm being yikes designed like people do sometimes, you know, and I really couldn't care less about the other person, then fine, and that doesn't help. But if davening for someone else means with sincerity, right? Sincere davening for someone else means you actually care, means it actually hurts you, right? When who's this guy? Suriel ben Avichayil. Nebuch, he's in the hospital with cancer, and he's a wife and five kids, and it's so tough. If I'm Amish, I feel it. I can't sleep at night. Or, you know, whatever the appropriate madriga is for whatever is wrong. But if I really feel the pain of someone else, and everyone knows that it could be that if you die for someone else, you don't really feel it, then enechami, that's worthless. No one's asking you to be insincere. This isn't a game where you have to, like, you know, you say some words and adds coins into the machine. You have to really mean it. If you really mean it, if it hurts you that your chaver is suffering, then of course your davening will work for someone else. Because even though they might not have any new reason to deserve being healed, but you deserve having your tzar taken away. You might be on a higher madriga and deserve to have your tzar taken away. So what's the difference if my tzar is because, you know, my tzar is because I have trouble, or my tzar is because I feel my chaver is troubled? Either way, I deserve my tzar to be taken away. And that is, I think, the most popular answer. The davening for someone else only works if I feel the tzar of their pain. Because then, if I'm in a higher madriga, I might deserve to have my tzar taken away. And it's like I'm telling Hashem, Taka, I can handle my tzar. You know, like, I don't have such big tzars, Baruch Hashem. But this guy's tzar is killing me. So for Hashem to reward me, it might be a factor that would help in taking away that guy's tzar. That, I think, is the most popular answer. That's what it says in all the English books.
You look at the Nusach and write yourself. Like Makavit Nirtei and Moi Yisrael. The Pashto says even if a person doesn't feel it, so they still achieve when they say the regular Nusach Hatzvila. You know, when it's built into the regular Nusach.
Even if a person doesn't feel it? I don't know, you know, I can't deny that it could be even if someone doesn't feel it, they have some sort of general Kavan and general dormant spirituality. But I don't think it's a big Kiddush philosophically to say that if someone doesn't really feel it, maybe it doesn't really have much of an effect. And you know, you don't find anywhere, I don't think you find anywhere in the halachic literature that anyone ever promised that davening without feeling it would have a significant effect. I'm not denying it have a kolshu effect, because you really do have a kolshu feeling. But in Chanami, davening without kavanah, we don't philosophically justify why that's a good idea. Because it's not such a good idea. In the days of Chazal, right, Habama and Derech didn't daven for 3 days. Days of Chazal, they took this seriously and they said, you know, if you're Torah, you might as well not daven. It's a waste of time. So it's not, I don't think I have to justify davening without Kavanah. Again, Bizmanenu, the minig is from a practical perspective, that since people are in such a low madriga somehow, that we daven without Kavanah, at least it'll, you know, keep you remembering the words of davening. At least it'll keep you orthodox.
I think that never should find the Chazal that says if you use the Nusach of the Ajik Nesak Adola, so it even works.
Might have some effect, I'll be so. Okay, could be. Sure. Not such a bucky, so at least even though some of it's on the sheet. Okay, the third explanation, Rav Dessler has, it's in Chelek Gimel, page 86, has an explanation, but it's a little bit complex. He says the way my tefillah can work for someone else is because if I see my tefillah is working for someone else, that's a tremendous, he says it just a little differently. The same shot as Simi was saying, maybe a little more stark. He says that if I see that my tefillah work for someone else, then I'll be inspired to keep up the chesed, and I'll be inspired to see how Hashem comes through for me, and it'll give me an aliyah ruchanit. So therefore, the real reason Hashem would answer my tefillah on behalf of someone else is not because that person deserves it more, because just lie down, that person doesn't deserve it, but because I will grow in spirituality from seeing my tefillos answered, and it'll reinforce my midah of chesed, and it'll reinforce my closeness to Hashem when I see Him answering my tefillos. So again, it's a reward for me. He just says in a more indirect way that, like, you know, it's sort of a way for Hashem to reinforce the spirituality of the davener. But again, it's not through the zechus of the person davened for. Okay, but I think the most mainstream understanding is that if you really feel the tzar of someone else, then it's really your tzar. So then you might deserve for it to be relieved. Okay, that is all one mainstream understanding that the way davening works is by making me better. They're assuming that, you know, we all know that. I don't know, we all know. There are a few people who are not like this, but 99% of people, I think they can, like, think very, very complex philosophical thoughts. But, you know, when it comes to actually going about their regular life, you know, they can do it in a very straightforward, balabatish fashion. And I think most people, like, if something really happens, if something really works out and whatever, they'll know their philosophy, but they'll be able to be inspired by it. Or let's see, once discuss this once. Let's discuss childishness, right? We all view childishness as a bad thing. He said, no, childishness is always a good thing. You have to know how to use it properly. Sometimes, not that it's important to legomery be a child. We're not Breslovers. But sometimes it's important to know, like, you know, how to, like, have a certain experience and not bring all the philosophical baggage along to that experience. At least that's what he said once. You know, he said he thinks that it's that if you know, if a grown man can, when they take the Torah out on Shabbos morning, run to kiss the Torah like the three-year-olds do, then that's a maila, not a chisara. He always runs to kiss the Torah. He's never. I don't think I've ever seen him miss it. And it's not, you know, it's not easy for him because he doesn't push. So it's not so fussy if you don't push. All right. Luckily, people make way. But it's not so pushing if you don't believe in pushing. Okay, back. The other, now, this is what I really understand. The radically different approach to tefillah is that maybe we should go back to our original halacha, which hanacha, our original assumption, so philosophically problematic, and assume, no, God really needs me to tell him what I want. How exactly is that mitaching, that Hashem really needs me to tell him what I want? So, you know, let's say it's really, until now we've been saying tefillah is for us, not for Hashem. Maybe tefillah really is for Hashem. Right, look at number five. Rav Pinkus says in Sharm B'Tefillah, he says, number five, the echad min ha'klalim, most of it's not, you know, very strictly philosophical, but he does have some sodas in there. Bina echad min ha'klalim ha'gdolim, it's all good, Moser. B'darki ha'shkachi, he says, the klal in the way ha'shkacha works, davgav the kodesh baruch hu ra'a kol v'yodivon tziyos, ha'vol kach sidu yisparach tzeno ha'nagos ha'olam, that Hashem made some rule when he created the world, shekiviyachol, right? We never really understand what kiviyachol means. Kiviyachols mean, that's the point. Kiviyachol is like, doesn't really make sense, but somehow it works out. Ain't no real mashin marin lefanim. Really? What was our whole kasha? Why do you have to dam to Hashem? Hashem knows everything. Why do you have to tell him what you need? You don't have to tell, you know, my kid has to tell me that he wants candy, because I don't know he wants candy. But I don't have to tell Hashem, he knows everything. The answer is no, Hashem doesn't. Kiviyachol, Ke'ilu doesn't know everything. Hashem only knows what you show him. Hashem doesn't know anything until you tell him. Meaning, obviously, on the level of Kiviyachol, it can't really be true. Then it would be Kvira. But Hashem makes a Ke'ilu, the way he runs the world, is as if he is like more of a person. Not Mamish. But as if he really doesn't know until I tell him. I really have to tell him because he didn't know. If I, Chas v'Shalom, you know, someone's sick or someone has Tzaras, Hashem doesn't know that they need help till he asks them. Again, kiviyachol, ki'ilu. V'zekla'al ponu l'kamakam pinos v'ashkachim de'ilaham yisot selam l'kimam chivar. Says, why is it necessary for Hashem to act in this way, which is not really true? Because obviously Hashem knows everything. Because it's an important cornerstone in order for us to realize that selam l'kim and have chivar chavshis. Somewhere, what I think this is saying is that in order for us to do our role in the world, Hashem created the whole world. The whole world is, right? Bookbinder will tell us that Olam is Milashon. Helem, right? That the whole nature of the world is that the world hides the real truth and is some level of a fake. It's as a hatsaga, as you would say in Hebrew. So really Hashem is, again, there are people who go much further and say, really, there can't be a world if you really understand Hashem. But saying really Hashem knows everything and Hashem doesn't need our help. He doesn't need us to tell him what to do. But in this hell-lame world, in order, since God created the world, in order for us to achieve certain things, right? Otherwise, what does Hashem need the world for? So he created the world in order for us to do something. In order for us to do something, he has to act a little less godlike and a little more human-like. in order for us to be able to relate to him and accomplish what we want. And therefore, Hashem acts in such a way, ke'ilu, he doesn't know until we tell him, Shem ikramat har shbiyas olam cholo lamos, that since it's all for us, Hashem has to somehow like have a little bit of yurida and ke'ilu act in a way that relates to us. And therefore, I assume somehow what he's saying is that since, you know, Hashem doesn't think we're all going to be such big philosophers, Hashem wants us to have a relationship with him and to be able to daven to him, etc. So therefore, he's involved in the hashgacha process in the world in such a way that he acts more limited and doesn't allow his omniscience, omnipotence, etc., etc. You know, he doesn't show his godliness cards in this world. And therefore, Taka, he doesn't know that I need a job until I tell him. Not Taka. But Ke'ilu, he doesn't know until I tell him. Now, on the one hand, this is, you know, a little bold, saying, you know, we have to relate to Hashem, you know, in a more as if we're really telling him something, as if he really doesn't know until we tell him, in a more human-like fashion. On the other hand, obviously, this is all b'ke'ilu, right? This is all an act Hashem's putting on, because necessary for creating the world is that act. And I think in general, if I could, before Bookbinder speaks, if I could generalize, this is a general philosophical, this is a broader philosophical problem, which is, if you read the Tanakh, Kipshuto, Hashem comes out, obviously, read Tanakh, Kipshuto, it doesn't mean Hashem is a human being. He's God, right? He obviously is all, you know, he's Esra Makos and Kriyas Yamsuf, etc. Meaning, but if you read Tanakh, Kipshuto, Hashem looks a lot more human than the philosophers think, right? Besides the fact they describe parts of his body and it describes emotions and, you know, and it even leaves out some of the big philosophical ideas like creating the world Yesh Me'ayin is not mefurish in the Chumash. I mean, unless you hold like a very interesting parshan of the Rambat, but according to most Rishonim, not mefurish in the Chumash. And you know, it's much more sort of old-fashioned, like we can imagine, old-fashioned people used to think of their gods as like superhuman somehow, but you don't have the philosophical idea that we would write about God. So why is that? So the Rambam says, you know, the lashon of the adam, etc., but if you understand the adam, because what all the words really mean, it really means a philosophical conception of God. But I think the other side of the coin is, and that's where Pinchas is coming from, is that no, the Tanakh writes about Hashem in a more human way, because that's the point, because the Tanakh is after the Beis HaBereishis. Before the Beis HaBereishis, in a Hanami, you would write of Hashem the way Aristotle did. Or, you know, but after the Beis HaBereishis, Hashem created a world where, in order for us to realize our role in the world, Hashem has to sort of hide his infiniteness. And, you know, I mean, this is ultimately, you know, if you were doing Kabbalah, this is what all these philosophical problems that have to do with Simpson have to do with Hashem. And he related to us in a more human way, all b'ke'ilu. Ke'ilu means like kids pretend, you know, all pretend. But that's the way Hashem relates to us, and that's why in the Chumash, you know, Hashem sort of writes about himself, and in the Nevi'im, you know, in a more human-like way, in a less abstract, philosophical way. And that, I think that's good for what he's saying here. That if you understand the Yesod, that Hashem is not, in this world, Hashem acts more limited, even though obviously it's not really true, then Tefillah makes a lot of sense. Taka, he doesn't know until I tell him. Look.
So that's what I don't understand. What is the idea I don't understand? Say that the Tzelem Elokim is as if limiting the Adias Hashem here in Olam Hazeh. The Tzelem Elokim in classically understood, there's no problem. Hashem acts in tandem. I just don't see what.
So it's a good question, and part of the problem is that in these Svarim, I'm not a Buckinghamer Finkus, nowadays most people are. I'm one of the few people who's not a Buckinghamer Finkus, but from what I gather, in these Svarim, which are more practical Musar Svarim, he's not necessarily trying to get into like philosophical Yisodos. He's trying to give like the level that people can practically use. So, you know, no ain safek that he understood many philosophical Yisodos when he wrote this, right? Mm-hmm. Finkus was a very accomplished, was a very accomplished Baal Machshava. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if he makes them clear all the time, maybe in some of the other books, I don't know. I'm not such a bucky. But somehow, I can't imagine he just meant that, you know, Hashem needs to not know until we tell him, otherwise we wouldn't have to tell him Elokim. I think he means more broadly that, you know, like many of the other Baal Machshava say, if Hashem was really Ein Sof, then Ein Od Milvado, maybe we couldn't exist except as robots, and Hashem has to sort of limit his infiniteness in order to give room for us to work. And one of the ways he limits his infiniteness is by not knowing until we tell him.
This is sad, on the one hand, it says, Yotzi Yaha Leva, maybe no call Nase. And now here we're going to say that Hashem's going to act.
I don't know. It's a good question. I wish I knew the answer, and that's the problem with Ke'ilu, is that, you know, it's a Ke'ilu, so I can't really understand it. But that's what he says.
Yeah, at a certain point, you have to explain why anybody has ever talked to God and things that they don't understand.
So that's what the morale was all made around.
Correct. We have the morale here, although that's the thing I least understand. Let's look a second. I think something similar to this in the Derech Hashem. He doesn't say it quite as radically in the Ramchal. The Ramchal says, in Beis, in the Ramchal, we already wrote. That's how he wrote that Tefillah really brings you to a very high Madrega. But in Aleph, he says, Inyan Tefillah Hu, Kihinim and Astar, Sisidra Chachma, Yonahu, Shalio, Sanabra, Mekab, Shefim, and Yusbarach, since we receive good things, I don't know, it's hard to translate Shefa into English. It literally means a flow, but that doesn't really capture. We receive good things from Hashem. Sir Shis, O Ruhim, a love, the Ishtar Velov Yashvana, we have to be. Order ourselves and ask for it. However, if we sort of awaken ourselves to ask for it, we'll get the shefa. And if not, you won't. And he said, since Hashem likes us, Hashem's about chesed, Makor 6. Since Hashem's about chesed, therefore he gave us a tzivoy to daven every day, so that he would be able to give us good things. Here also he seems to be saying that somehow the way Hashem created the world is that we can't get good things unless we ask for them. It's not quite as radical as Rav Pinkas. He doesn't say Hashem doesn't know what we need till we ask it. But somehow, like, because Hashem wanted us to be able, you know, somehow the way Hashem created the world is that he can't give it to us till we ask for him. So it's not a matter of Schar V'Onesh. It's, you know, I don't know exactly what he means. It says, Minas Storm Shesidra Chachmal Yonim. I mean, he obviously meant a lot more than this. But somehow, Tefillah has special power. What they're both saying in common is that it's not that Tefillah just makes me a better person. Tefillah has special power. For a Pinkus, it mamish, God doesn't know till I tell him. That's very radical, obviously, Ke'ilu. For the Ramchal, that somehow Hashem set up the world that Tefillah has a special power to get things. There's no way to get things without Tefillah. Now, obviously, sometimes good things happen to you without tefillah, but that would have to be for side reasons. But in the regular way the world works, there's no way to get things without tefillah, so there really is a koach in tefillah. There really is a hidden koach in tefillah, either for a Pinkus that God doesn't know until we ask him, or for the Ramchal, he didn't explain how, there's just some sort of koach in tefillah.
This is a quote for the Ramchal on Mamor Chazam. Rashi quotes in Pais Bereshis, Kilo and Tir, Hashem Elokim al Aretz, Ba'adim Ayin Labor Zadamah, so the Chazal says, since he didn't dive, and so there was no Geshem.
Correct. Well, you can understand in other places too that Hashem just wanted to be madrich him in having a proper relationship to Hashem through fulfilling his needs. So you don't have to say this, but now the Maral I don't understand at all. It's the I figured bookbinder would help us, but 7 the Maral says often I don't understand the Maral. It's like something matches, but I'm not sure exactly what it means. Like I see how the pattern matches, but I'm not sure how it means. But in number 7, Yishol and Alfilam Roy Adam Sheet and Hashem Yisbarach Elof. Right, the first question, right? If Hashem wants to give it, why do you have to daven? He knows what he's doing. If you're supposed to get it good, and if you're not supposed to get it, it's not going to help to nudge. Why do you have to speak? It's enough to think. Again, what I would have said to this is just a technical answer. That, you know, machshava is good enough, but your machshava, you take your machshava more seriously when you say it. You know, when you say it, you focus better. But that's not what he says. Until people come to all kinds of apikorsis. When you daven, it's because you want to be mashlim yourself what you're missing. You're chaser, you need hashlama, and Hashem hears your tefillah. What makes you an adam? We know Uncle says, "Vayti adam nefesh chaya is ruach mamalala." You're only an adam when you're speaking. Therefore, if you're not speaking, then you're not. You don't have needs as an adam. You have to speak to have your needs as an adam. So again, if you're not a makabel unless you're asking, unless you're asking b'dibur, you're not an adam makabel. Unless you're an adam makabel, how could you receive your shleimus? You have to have your chisorin as an adam, which means you have to be speaking. So you can only get it if you're chaser as an adam, which means you have to daven to Hashem b'dibur. Okay, you get the basic point. I'm not exactly sure what he means by this. Like the words work out very nicely, but I don't totally understand like what the real meaning of it is in a way that makes sense. Bookbinder?
Well, I'll tell you, the Maharal's closed on this idea a few times. And the idea is that really there are main aspects of a person, and then there are aspects of him that are just tofel, that happen to happen, but those aren't really defining it as be'etzem, as the aspects that are considered ikar. So the main point of Adam, he writes, is that Adam is al-shem ha-adama, that everything is b'koach, and the appearance has to be yol tzil l'fo'al. So a person who's really tzil l'fo'al is with the nishmas chayim. What his essence is to speak. So even though he thinks and eats and all these other things, but those are only secondary aspects to the fact that he's alive and speaking. So the fact of the matter is that tefillah is so ba'etzem, and his connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and continued existence is so ba'etzem, that it has to show up in the main area of his definition.
Okay. So, I still a little troubled. The reason I quoted this here is because, you know, if it was just some book that I found that said something I wasn't sure exactly what it meant, I would have left it out. Why do I have to waste everyone's time? Since the Maharal, I have so much of the Maharal enough that I know that Mestama, he meant something which I would actually appreciate understanding if I just understood it properly. That Mestama, there's something that I would like here, that I would understand here and benefit from if I could just translate it in the right terms.
He says so much that a person could have two eyes and two ears, but if a person were to have two tongues, so he'd be two people.
Okay.
That's what he
does. I'm back in the same boat. That makes a lot of sense in terms of matching up the words, but I don't really know what it means. That a person had two eyes, he'd be two people. But I'm leaving that as food for thought. Okay, I want to just end with, because it's already late, but I don't want to come back to this next time. The Nefesh HaChaim has a much more radical idea. I don't know, maybe we shouldn't deal with Nefesh HaChaim's here. The Nefesh HaChaim in number 9 is also very fascinating things. But not for do we ever talk about Kabbalah yet?
No.
You know what? So let's end now. I'll come back to 8 and 9 and maybe we'll just have a chance to. Did I ever share my opinion about Kabbalah? No? Okay. So maybe what we'll do now is we'll stop now. We'll have a shorter, 20-minute one next week. And next week we'll deal with, of course, 8 and 9, and we'll finish up like a more, Nefesh HaChaim Kabbalistic approach to tefillah, and also I'll share my thoughts about Kabbalah in general, and that's what we'll do next time. Okay. Yeah.
You carry yourself in
Kabbalah, you know,
it's
important. Obviously, it's